Couldn't possibly be more ready.
Are we ready, Patsy?
Okay. Good morning. I'd like to call to order the House Committee on Human Services on this lovely Monday morning, April 25th, 2011. Thank you all for being here. Thank you all for watching at home. I hope you had a wonderful weekend. And we are now going to launch into our second phase, and we're going to hear the first of some bills from over in
the Senate,
which I understand is also part of this building. And as you can see, we have two bills to hear. One is Senate Bill 88A, and the other is Senate Bill 143. I'd like to open a public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 88A. And will you tell us a little bit about this,
Jennifer? Mr. Chair, just for the record, I don't know how you open a possible work session.
Thank you,
For suspending the rules, I set his mind to that.
We should vote to suspend the rules to allow.
Can we not do that? You act like you've been through this before. I want to correct myself, thanks to my good colleague, and I'm opening just the public hearing on Senate Bill 88A. Jennifer.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 88A requires the Department of Consumer and Business Services to adopt by rule prompt payment requirements for long-term care insurance. It requires the rules include definitions for claim and clean claim. It requires DCBS to consider prompt payment requirements in model acts developed by the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. It defines the term benefit trigger for purposes of prompt payment. It requires DCBS to adopt by rule internal and external review procedures for denials of long-term care insurance claims. It requires long-term care policies to include a clear description of the appeals process, and it applies to policies issued or renewed on or after July 1st, 2012. It does have an emergency provision. There is a no revenue impact statement issued, as well as a minimal fiscal impact statement. It was moved out of the Senate Committee on Healthcare, Human Services, and Rural Health Policy with a vote of 4 ayes and 1 excused, and it passed off the Senate floor with 29 ayes and 1 excused vote.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. We have two folks who have signed up, and I'd like to invite them up, Teresa Miller and her colleague Anthony. And as you're coming up, I would say to Teresa, this is a pleasant surprise. I have very few good memories from my time on consumer protection, but you're one of them, and you're welcome. I haven't seen you all session, so you're welcome. Please identify yourself, and we're eager for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Teresa Miller. I'm the administrator of the Insurance Division at the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and it's a pleasure to be here today. I've been spending most of my time on the Senate, so it's nice to come over and visit with you all. I'm here to talk about the engrossed version of Senate Bill 88, which provides additional protections for consumers who buy long-term care insurance. The bill would extend some of the same consumer protections that currently exist for other types of health insurance to long-term care insurance, specifically requirements that insurance companies pay claims promptly and that consumers have the benefit of grievance or appeal rights. The Insurance Division received 291 complaints related to long-term care and home health care during the three-year period that ended just this last December. Over half of those complaints were related to claims handling issues. Senate Bill 88A proposes changes to address the complaints received, including requiring the department to adopt rules applicable to long-term care insurance policies regarding prompt payment of claims and internal and external review of adverse benefit triggers. We anticipate these rules, as was mentioned earlier, would track the model adopted by the National Association of Insurance Commissioners and require long-term care insurers to provide standard internal and external review process for reviewing whether the conditions of a benefit trigger are met. We anticipate that the rules would specify that if an insurance company's decisions are upheld through the internal appeal process, that a consumer would then be able to ask for external review. In external review, an independent review organization would review the medical records and other relevant materials to determine if the insurance company made the correct decision. And finally, the rules would provide that the insurance company would pay the costs of the independent external review. The Insurance Division believes that these requirements, which are in line with the requirements for other types of health insurance, are fair, are not unduly burdensome, and would help protect some of Oregon's most vulnerable citizens. And with that, I appreciate the opportunity to be here. I do have my colleague Anthony Behrens here, who is our health policy expert, so if there are any difficult questions, I will be happy to refer those to Anthony, but thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. I do the same thing with my co-chair. we have questions, first of all, for Teresa. Madam Chair.
Thank you. So talk some about why the delayed application of this new rule.
Madam Co-Chair, the delayed application is so that the Insurance Division can adopt the extensive rules that we will need to adopt to put these protections in place and also give insurance companies the ability to respond to those new rules. So,
Mr. Co-Chair, do we have, who else is coming to testify?
That's it.
That's it. So nobody from the insurance companies?
Not that I can see.
May I follow up?
Please.
Did the insurance companies testify on the Senate side over this bill?
Madam Co-Chair, we have been in contact with the America's Health Insurance Plans, who represents, I think, many of the insurance plans in Oregon. And actually, the engrossed version is as a result of some of the discussions that we had with them, which essentially just has us do everything through rule. The industry typically likes to have, when we do things like this, the closer we can adopt these sorts of protections, the closer we can stay to the model, the happier they are, just because then when they work across states, they have similar requirements across states. So that's why you see the A engrossed version. And I believe John Powell is here, and I think he indicated that I think he's representing Regents here? State Farm here. And they support the bill is what he told me right before the hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And nobody else would like to speak on this bill at this time. Just double-checking. So I've got the A engrossed version here, I assume.
Mr. Jacket.
Representative Harker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for either one of you, I guess. Were there any particularly contentious areas of the bill that had to be hammered out over there?
Co-chairs and Representative Harker, no.
We are just dying for controversy. We demand controversy.
Sorry.
Okay. Representative White.
Would you like us to make some controversy over this bill? Because we don't have a lot to work on, and it could help keep this committee open longer.
Yeah, thanks for
you feel the need to do.
With that, yes, I oh please, Madam Chair.
I forgot what I was going to ask. will you be coming back to the Senate committee or here to talk about the new rules that have been developed?
The new rules that we will be developing
right.
Under this? I don't think there's anything in the bill that would require us to do that. We can certainly always do that.
Mr. Chair, I think I would like to hear back from you. That would be in it. Year and a half. You'll be doing this July of 12, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
correct.
I think I would really be interested in having you come back to tell us what rules you did develop to see how they're working or how the potential that they're working well.
We'd be happy to do that.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. With that, thank you for your testimony.
You're welcome.
And I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 88A. And I would like to open the public hearing, and the public hearing only, on Senate Bill 143. And our lone testifier, did we have that? Oh, we got two. Thank you. Oh, and you know, I was thinking maybe you could give us just a little background on that first.
Be happy to.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 143 alters the definition of low-income customers as it relates to the eligibility for the Oregon Telephone Assistance Program by removing the requirement that residents of a long-term care facility or a residential care facility who receive medical assistance also not exceed 135% of the federal poverty guidelines. This has a no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact statement. It passed out, moved out of the Senate Business, Transportation, and Economic Development Committee unanimously, and passed out of the Senate floor with 29 ayes and one excused vote.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. We've got Susan Ackerman and John Cray, if necessary. That's not a hyphenated last name, correct? I'm just kidding. Please, your testimony is more than welcome.
Chair Gilliam, Chair Tomei, and rest of the committee. I was unfortunately going to put the unnecessary after Mr. Cray's name. Mr. Cray is part of the Oregon Commission's RSPF staff and does a good job there. My name is Susan Ackerman. I am one of your three public utility commissioners, and we urge your support of this bill. What we discovered is that we have a law, the Residential Service Protection Fund law, that provides low-income assistance to certain low-income consumers in the state for basic telephone service. One of those programs is called the Oregon Telephone Assistance Program, and it gives eligible consumers, eligible as defined as incomes no higher than 135% of the federal poverty level, $13.50 a month to help them pay down the cost of a basic telephone service. $3.50 of that comes from the state. Another $10 comes from the Federal Communications Commission. But the difficulty we've had is with some Medicaid patients in residential care facilities or long-term care facilities, they may technically have income above the 135% of poverty level income requirement. But as a practical matter, because they're in these care facilities, all of their income is swept into the coffers. That sounds pejorative. I don't mean it that way. All their income is swept to pay for the cost of their care, leaving them often with almost no income at all, sometimes zero to a maximum, about $150. So many of them can't really afford telephone service, even though they technically don't meet the criteria of the bill. What this bill does is it would remove the requirement that they have income no higher than 135% of poverty level. So if you're a Medicaid patient, in a long-term or residential care facility, and you have income higher than 135% of the poverty level, you will still be eligible for the OTAP program if this bill passes. And that's the purpose of it, and we, the commission, urges you to pass it, please.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there questions? Madam Chair.
Thank you. How many people are we talking about in this category?
I'm going to let Mr. Cray talk to address that question.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Cray. I'm the Residential Service Protection Fund Program Manager. To answer your question, since we started tracking in 2007, we've denied about 307 low-income customers in these facilities. So we are looking at if this bill passes, we are looking at a biennial cost of $25,788 at the rate of $350 per person.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions? Go ahead, please.
Does this have to go to Ways and Means?
I don't believe it does.
No, it doesn't.
So help me understand that. If it costs the state $25,000?
How is it not going to Ways and Means?
Yeah.
Well, it didn't have a referral on the Senate side for Ways and Means, and this has a minimal impact statement. There was no statement issued. It's just indicating a minimal.
Okay. All right.
Good question.
If I could offer a comment, just to be clear, it's $25,000 per biennium. So I think that's why it came into the minimal effect.
Okay.
12. Okay. Just one quick question just to make sure I understand. So if we're removing that requirement of 135%, is there going to be a floor of any level, any percentage?
A floor of any level.
So does that number change? 135% of the federal poverty guideline. What's the new guideline under this bill? Or is there just not going to be a limitation?
They would still have to meet the definition of low-income customer under Section 6.5A, which is they need to be receiving benefits from the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program or some other low-income public assistance program. And So yes, they would still have to meet that. But if they are a Medicaid patient in the residential care facility or long-term care facility, they can't come anywhere near to meeting that 135% of poverty level anyway. So it's pretty limited to a very small subset of patients, citizens.
Thank you. That's helpful. Well, thank you both for coming.
Thank you.
And with that, colleagues, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 143. And, Madam Chair, before we adjourn, maybe you could say a few words about Wednesday.
I'm going to let Jennifer say a few words about Wednesday.
It's a deal.
Committee members, Wednesday we're having an informational hearing relative to the lottery funds and the gambling addiction services that are available. So a representative from the Oregon State Lottery will be here in conjunction with Tim Murphy from Bridgeway Addiction Services, Recovery Services, as well as someone from Addiction and Mental Health under Oregon Health Authority. So, and the meeting will begin at 9 on Wednesday as well, just a reminder. So it'll be from 9 to 10.
And then the following week?
The following week, we don't have anything on the agenda yet for Monday. I believe that would be May the 2nd. May the 4th, we've discussed doing informationals, actually two informationals. One, Representative Thompson, suggestion relative to Polk County Health
Integrated Services.
Doing that, trying to coordinate with that on May 4th. That was an available day for those folks, as well as doing a short informational on the last half of the hour, or last half, 9:30 to 10. There's some programs, youth forum that dealt with, they did projects relative to obesity, and they're getting a recognition from the governor's office that same day, and they'll be in the Capitol. So they wanted to come to our committee, talk about there's various projects that each of the folks did, each of the kids did, and before they received their awards from the governor, talk to us a little bit about those projects, those obesity projects. So that's tentatively scheduled for that same day, since they'll be here.
And Representative Thompson, how much time does your group need to present? We could meet earlier if we need more time, earlier than 9.
What did we talk about, 45 minutes?
I think we talked about a half an hour, 45 minutes, something along those lines.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Okay. But the youth forum only wanted from like 9:30 to 10, so if they could. So.
Okay. So we're still meeting at 9 then. As far as we know. And then on Wednesday, May 4th, that same day at 3 o'clock, Representative Greenlick has invited us to join.
Ann Thompson.
Pardon? Ann Thompson, sorry.
Are you on that committee?
Invited us to meet with them at another informational meeting regarding the Providence Child Center Hospital. Right? So thank you. So please put that on your calendars also if you have that time available.
Some of you have toured that facility. Representative Frederick has and has told me about it. And I'm eager to hear what they have to say as well as tour up there. But until the session's out, that's probably not possible. But I'm looking forward to that. And I do appreciate the healthcare committee inviting us. So although it's not in our regular scheduled time for some of us, how many of you are already on that committee? 4 of you. You'll be there anyway. So if you can fit it in your schedule, I think it'd be well worth your time.
It looks like the, if I may, Mr. Co-Chair, the Senate bills are not coming in hot and heavy now. So we have time to do some more informational hearings. One of them is regarding the long-term care ombudsman program. We'll try to set that up. I'd like for all of us, I think we'd both like for all of us to go to visit the new state hospital.
Yes.
For the mentally ill, so we'd like to set that up. That would take more than an hour. We might want to do that like on a Wednesday from 8 till 10, on a Wednesday, maybe not next Wednesday. And are there any other, wasn't somebody interested in hearing from foster children as they're aging out of foster care?
I think that's set for.
We've got that scheduled.
Okay.
But you're right, that's coming up as well.
And I'm also interested in looking at the treatment programs, the state treatment programs in the area.
Community mental health. Anything else in particular that we talked about and didn't have time to do in the past? Well, if you think of it, Representative Wagner.
I had dropped a couple of bills just dealing with senior care facilities and everything, too, that just wanted to open the discussion and start working on for next session. Maybe we might have time to do something in the special session.
Right.
For our monthly session next year, but I would just want to do things.
And those bills are in the hopper, at least for this session?
Yes.
Let's talk about them. I haven't looked at them, but I'd like to see that.
So, because I know we haven't had a chance to get it, but I'm just trying to get the discussion out there, and I've been meeting with everybody on it.
Good. So, okay. That's great. Good.
Whether we want to talk about it here or not is another issue.
Oh, I think we should, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Any other issues?
Personal?
Yes.
How much time do you have?
I've got
all right. With that, I want to thank you all for coming on this Monday morning, and I will adjourn the House Committee on Human Services.